Welcome to the Wedlake Bell Legal Podcast, covering a range of legal topics, including updates from our four practice groups: private client, real estate, business services, and dispute resolution.
Welcome to this episode 11 of the Wedlake Bell podcast series. Your presenters are myself, Clive Webber, pensions partner in the Wedlake Bell Pensions and Employee Benefits team, and my colleague, Caroline Miller, partner in the Wedlake Bell Private Client team.
Hello.
Wedlake Bell takes a holistic approach to estate planning. The Wedlake Bell Private Client and Pensions team work closely together to ensure all aspects of an individual's estate planning needs are comprehensively met. This includes pension death benefit aspects. Someone's pension fund, after their home, is often their most valuable asset. Taking pension funds into account when carrying out estate planning makes eminent sense and can indeed provide great opportunities for cascading wealth to future generations within the tax-favoured pension scheme wrapper.
I quite agree, Clive. I often meet clients who are in the fortunate position of having large pension pots and are looking to do some tax planning. I advise them that lump sum death benefits under a registered pension schemes are usually outside the pension scheme member's estate, and advise them in the first instance to speak to their pension provider to understand the value of their death benefits.
That's quite right, Caroline. Pension scheme members should start by identifying the pension scheme death benefits available to them. And then they should obtain professional advice, including our advice, and this will enable them to complete appropriate letters of wishes and detailed guidance to the pension scheme trustees, setting out how and to whom they would like benefits to be paid after their death. There are commonly three distribution choices available to pension scheme trustees. Firstly, outright distribution. Secondly, placing the pension death benefits into a family trust. And lastly, retaining the funds as flexi-access pension funds.
I usually explain to clients the decision as to whether to distribute under any of those methods is usually influenced by, firstly, family circumstances, secondly, the need for control and management, and lastly, the need for asset protection. But also, one must not forget tax considerations.
I agree. Each individual's circumstances are different, and there is definitely no one-size-fits-all. The options available provide flexibility, and the best choice depends on the specific circumstances.
Now, to explore how these options work, can we take an example? If we have Derek and Lizzie, who lead busy lives and regard financial and legal matters as a nuisance, and they want some advice on estate planning. So if we say Derek is a 70-year-old man with adult children from a first marriage, he has a new partner, Lizzie, who's 60 years old and has children from a previous relationship and personal assets of 1 million. Derek himself has a £5 million undrawn pension pot with XYZ Pension Company and personal assets totaling 2 million, and he's also created a family trust. We have been advised that Lizzie feels very vulnerable. She's not married to Derek and her assets are far less than Derek's. Her parents both live to 100, whereas Derek is not in good health. Derek has told us that, on the contrary, he is as fit as a fiddle and plays golf 6 times a week. He says it is Lizzie who is less well and is becoming extremely forgetful. So Clive, the first question I'm often asked in this scenario is to explain the pension fund, which the client finds a mystery. Can you help?
Well, certainly. The pension fund is a personal pension scheme in this instance, known as a SIP. The trustee is the XYZ Pension Company, and the scheme investments are quoted shares managed by ABC Investment Managers. The scheme is money purchase, so the amount of pension benefits, including death benefits, depends on the ultimate value of the fund.
So isn't there a risk that most of the fund has been used up in providing pension benefits by the time Derek dies?
Yes, certainly in theory, But if Derek takes the view that it is better for him to live off his ISAs and other non-pension assets, this keeps the pension fund intact, and then it can pass on his death to, for instance, his existing family trust. You may recall the Wedlake Bell private client team established the trust a few years ago on Derek's instructions, and Derek has carefully selected his two best friends as the trustees. There are tax implications for the running of this trust, which perhaps you can elaborate on, Caroline.
Of course. The tax consequences of paying the pension fund death benefit into the trust will depend on Derek's age at death. If he's over 75, then there's a 45% income tax charge. But if he dies under 75, there's only a 45% income tax charge in narrow circumstances. There are also tax issues during the lifetime of the trust. The trust is a private trust, and as such, it'll be within the inheritance tax trust regime. The trust will be subject to inheritance tax 10-year anniversary charges and exit charges at a maximum rate of 6% of the fund, unless the sums are distributed from the trust within 2 years of the death of the scheme member. So that would be Derek. Trust income and gains are subject to tax under private trust rules. For income tax purposes, there is a credit for the 45% income tax charge incurred where the scheme member dies over the age of 75.
Well, thanks for explaining that. Tax considerations aside, there are many benefits a private trust can provide, are there not?
Oh, you're quite correct, Clive. A trust can provide protection for the assets on a beneficiary's death or divorce. A letter of wishes can be prepared, providing guidance to trustees. And a trust usually allows additional beneficiaries to be added, providing flexibility to take account of changing family circumstances. And the trustee themselves will be the scheme member's personal choice. So in our example, Derek has chosen two friends as his trustees.
I understand that despite there being possible different types of trust, as most fall within the same IHT tax regime, a discretionary trust would be best suited to holding the pension fund.
That's quite true, Clive. Since 2006, there is broadly no inheritance tax differences between the different types of trust, unless the trust is set up to benefit bereaved minors, charities, or disabled persons. The two main types of trusts are discretionary trusts and life interest trusts. A discretionary trust is the most flexible arrangement and allows the person creating the trust, in this case the scheme member, to select a wide class of beneficiaries and provide guidance to the trustees on when and how to benefit particular members. No one member of the class has a right to payment. Life interest trusts provide beneficiaries with a right to income from the trust for life and are often used to benefit surviving spouses or partners, with the capital passing to children on their death. There can be income tax advantages to using this type of trust. The family circumstances and tax implications should be considered before deciding which type of trust is most appropriate. In my experience, discretionary trusts are the most popular. So if we return to our example, Lizzie has told us she's fearful of Derek's family trust. She has no rights under it, and it will be wholly reliant on the trustees. The trust is discretionary, and she's only a potential beneficiary. She has no confidence in Derek's trustees meeting her needs. One of the trustees lives most of the year abroad, and another does not understand finances. She wants Derek's letter of wishes to his pension fund trustees to say that at least 2.5 million of the pension fund should pass to her outright, even if the rest has to go to Derek's family trust.
But if Lizzie received 2.5 million outright, wouldn't there be an inheritance tax charge?
Well, assuming Derek dies first, the 2.5 million would form part of Lizzie's estate on her subsequent death. So not only would there be an inheritance tax charge of 40% on Derek's death, as Derek and Lizzie aren't married, and therefore there's no inheritance tax spouse exemption available, the balance would also be subject to inheritance tax on Lizzie's death, insofar as she's not spent or given it away. So as well as the inheritance tax disadvantages, there is also asset protection concerns for Derek, as the 2.5 million could pass under Lizzie's will for the benefit of Lizzie's children to the exclusion of Derek's own children. If the £2.5 million was instead part of Derek's family trust, there would be no inheritance tax charge of 40% on Lizzie's death, just the 10-year anniversary and exit charges at a maximum of 6%, which can be easily managed. So on a general note, though, if on the scheme member's death, a pension fund passes outright to someone, are there not income tax considerations depending on the age of the pension scheme member at death?
Well, that's quite true, Caroline. For a pension scheme member considering leaving pension death benefits outright, the following tax and other factors should be considered. First of all, on the tax side, there can be income tax implications, but this depends on whether the scheme member dies before or after age 75. On death before age 75, there's no income tax on payment out to the beneficiary, providing a distribution within the 2-year permitted period is activated. There is the possibility of what's called a lifetime allowance charge on the value of undrawn pension funds, but that's a subject for another day. If the death occurs on or after age 75, income tax is payable on outright distribution to an individual at the individual's marginal income tax rate, or at 45% if paid to a trust, as already mentioned. So far as inheritance tax is concerned, there's no inheritance tax if sums are paid out by the scheme trustees in exercise of their discretion within 2 years of the scheme member's death. The sums are then part of the recipient's estate for future IHT purposes. So that's the tax factors. But other factors in the case of outright distribution to one or more individuals also need to be kept in mind. For instance, on outright distribution, there is no control over the recipient's use of the funds. For instance, the recipient may be a spendthrift, or there may be matrimonial difficulties, and the funds end up forming part of the divorce pot.
So, on the other hand, if we put the whole 5 million into the family trust, this will ensure the 5 million eventually passes to Derek's children. And as mentioned earlier, there would then be no inheritance tax on Lizzie's death if the sum is in trust, but there would be inheritance tax 10-year charges and no control for Lizzie over the money. So, Clive, I kind of feel we haven't quite dealt with all of Lizzie's concerns. What else do you think we could do?
Well, an alternative would be to ask the XYZ pension company, which acts as trustee, to hold the 5 million pension assets on a flexi access pension arrangement for Lizzie. This will keep the £5 million within the pension scheme wrapper so it can pass down the generations and, under current legislation, avoid the inheritance tax 10-yearly and exit charges. Also, and importantly, the pension fund will not form part of Lizzie's estate on her subsequent death.
So, can you explain what a flexi access pension arrangement actually is?
Of course. This means that the fund remains within the tax-favoured wrapper of a registered pension scheme. In more detail, on the tax side, where the member dies before age 75, there's no income tax on constituting the flexi access arrangement or on drawing the capital or income subsequently. Where the member dies on or after age 75, on the flexi access arrangement being constituted, income tax is payable at the flexi access beneficiary's marginal income tax rate, but only as and when capital or income is drawn. Where the flexi access beneficiary subsequently dies on or after age 75 or before, the treatment is comparable to that just explained. So far as inheritance tax is concerned, the flexi access pension fund assets are outside IHT and under current legislation can pass down several generations free of IHT. The IHT 10-year anniversary or exit charges do not apply. The assets simply remain within the registered pension scheme wrapper and are not in a family private trust. But there are other considerations. Firstly, there is minimal protection for the funds in question. The flexi access beneficiary can draw all or part of the funds and spend the lot. There's dependence on the pension scheme provider for constituting the flexi access fund and overseeing its investment.
So if after Derek's death, the XYZ pension company held the £5 million pension assets on a flexi access arrangement for Lizzie, what happens on her subsequent death?
Well, good question. Again, Lizzie can express the wish that on her death, the pension fund is retained on the flexi access arrangement and can nominate her own children and Derek's children as her successors under the flexi access arrangement. In this way, the funds can be retained in the tax-favoured wrapper of a registered pension scheme for successor generations. The tax charge on Liz's death would depend on whether she dies before or after age 75. However, it's true to say Derek is nervous of the XYZ pension company, as the trustees are part of a pension company administering hundreds of pension arrangements, and is also nervous about subsequent possible tax changes. Also, what's to stop Lizzie drawing all the £5 million?
It seems that there are no perfect solutions. Whether distribution is outright, into flexi access or into a family trust, there are going to be pros and cons. So I think what we need to do is devise a sensible plan. In the circumstances here, both flexi access arrangements and the family trust seem to have their benefits and uses.
Well, you've hit the nail on the head. A mixed approach may be best. For instance, why not give X percent to Lizzie outright to cater for short-term need, Y percent to the family trust so Derek can be sure at least part of his wealth passes essentially to his own children, and the remaining Z percent held in a flexi access arrangement for Lizzie, and then after her death for Derek and Lizzie's children under the flexi access arrangement.
But hold on, will XYZ Pension Company agree to these arrangements?
Well, very, very sensible question. Key to this are the terms of Derek's letter of wishes. These terms will need to address not only the above three-way division, but also give non-binding guidance to the trustees of Derek's family trust and to the XYZ Pension Company as the pension scheme administrator. The letter will also need to request Lizzie to nominate Derek and her children as successors under the flexi access arrangement, albeit there is no guarantee Lizzie will do so. The letters of wishes are not binding, but they are key persuasive documents where legal input is essential in deciding the content of the letters.
We also need to keep in mind that unless Derek makes sufficient provision for Lizzie under his will, Lizzie could bring a claim under the Inheritance Provision for Family Independence Act 1975 for part of his non-pension estate. And this is an area that Wedlake Bell have particular specialism in. So to prevent a claim, Derek should ensure that both his will and pension arrangements make reasonable provision for Lizzie when taken together. And if not, this is ideally discussed with Lizzie and justified to her during his lifetime. We would also want to highlight to Derek and Lizzie that they should, with our help, review and revise their wills, as their pensions and wills should be dealt with together in one overall estate planning strategy. Derek should update his letter of wishes to his pension scheme administrator to reflect his final decision. And we'd also want to discuss with them lasting powers of attorney for both health and care and financial decisions.
Well, that all sounds very sensible. Could I just ask, what about government reform of inheritance tax and changing the present favourable tax treatment for flexi-access pension arrangements?
Well, good question, Clive. The government has recently completed the first stage of its inheritance tax review last autumn, and there is no present sign of the government changing the flexible access rules.
Well, thank you for listening. We are now coming to the end of our allocated time for this podcast. Have a good day.
You just listened to the Wedlake Bell Legal Podcast. If you liked our episode and want to know more, then check out our website, www.wedlakebell.com. Wedlake Bell. Building relationships is at the heart of everything we do.